Welcome to The Afflicted and Affected. My name is Chris Schroeder, and it is the purpose of this webcast to host prominent guests from the fields of addictive illness treatment and other personalities involved in recovery processes. It will be our goal to educate both the professional and non-professional in the most modern and effective treatment methods and other resources that are available. Our guest tonight is Bill Borchert. Bill was nominated for an Emmy in 1989 for the writing of My Name is Bill W., the story about Bill Wilson, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. That movie starred James Garner and James Woods. What we're going to talk a little bit about today, though, is the book that Bill wrote, When Love Is Not Enough, that's been produced into a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie for CBS, and that will be out April 29th. Bill,
April 25th.
I'm sorry, April 25th. Bill, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in digging into the biographical details of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, Bill.
Well, you know, we often hear about God things, you know, God happenings, God shots, and that's what this was. We happened to be living in a town called Rye, New York, at the time. We lived there for about 22 years. It was in Westchester County, New York. And Lois and Bill Wilson had a home in Bedford Hills, New York, which is only about 20 minutes away. And one day my wife came home and said that she met this wonderful lady named Lois Wilson at a picnic at her home in Bedford Hills. And she had gone there with some other friends of hers, and she wanted me to come up and meet her. So we did the following weekend. And when Lois showed me around her house, the upstairs room covered the entire length of the house, and she had turned it into like an AA Al-Anon museum. I mean, there were photographs of the founders of AA, Bill and Dr. Bob. There were photographs of the founders of Al-Anon, and then there was pictures and all kind of accolades from all over the world, from all kinds of countries, you know, congratulating them and all they had done for the world and all the lives they had saved. And anyway, as I'm going through this museum, and I happened to be in the movie business at the time, I said to myself, my God, what a wonderful movie this would make. And so I didn't know, I just met Lois, but my wife and Lois formed a very quick and loving, you know, bond between them. So I asked for Lois's permission to do a movie about all this, and she smiled and she said, well, let's get to know each other and we'll see. And that relationship then lasted for over 15 years before she passed away. We not only became friends, we became very, very close. We became family. We would bring Lois down to our home with our children on holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and she became part of our family. We became part of hers. And so in getting to know her and her getting to know me, she gave me permission. Not only permission, she put the love and confidence she had for my wife, she put it into me and shared with me the most intimate moments of her life with Bill. And I would spend, you know, hours and days and weeks and months with her in a tape recorder putting all this down. I wound up with about 11 hours of tapes, which, as you know, is a lot of tape recordings.
Sure.
Yeah. And from that, I wrote the movie, My Name is Bill W. I had hoped and prayed that she would stay alive, because by this time she was 97 years old, that I wanted her to stay alive to see the movie. But she died about 6 months before the movie came out. She passed away on October 5th of 1988, and My Name is Bill W. came out on April 30th of 1989. So that's basically how the whole thing began.
You know, my personal experience with the movie was I was in treatment for alcoholism in April of 1989, and it was a 28-day program, and everyone was talking about the movie coming out in the treatment center, and they had to make an executive decision in the treatment center of whether or not they should allow the inpatients to watch the movie. And, you know, I'm glad they did, because I got a chance to actually watch it when I was in treatment for alcoholism. But even more significant in my life was I relapsed after that treatment episode. And about 6, 7 months, 8 months later, when I was going through my last withdrawal, the DTs from alcoholism, I had the VHS tape from this, because I had my family record it while I was in rehab. Mm-hmm. And in the last 3 days, the 3 days that I was detoxing, I was just watching it over and over again. I probably watched it 25 times in 3 days, because that's as close as I could get to, you know, I couldn't leave the house yet. Mm-hmm. I was still hallucinating, but you know, the movie is very, very important to me personally for my own, you know, my own experience. And it, you know, means a lot to me.
And me too, for the same reason, you know.
And you know, I thank you so much for the diligence that you put into it. You quite obviously were an insider with so much of the truth that came out in that.
Well, when God has a job for us to do, Chris, he paves the way, you know. He sets up the situations for us to you know, to go through, and that's what he did in this situation. I was in the movie business at the time. I think I mentioned to you that we made, you know, I had three partners in a company called Artist Entertainment Complex, and we made, you know, Kansas City Bomber with Raquel Welch. We made Serpico with Al Pacino. We made Dog Day Afternoon with Pacino. But this, by far, naturally, is the most important movie I'll ever, well, until this recent one, this is the most important movie I've ever been involved with.
Let's talk a little bit about the Lois Wilson story. Now, did you have material left over from My Name Is Bill W. that you were that you used to put a story together from Lois's viewpoint?
Oh, absolutely. As I say, I had all of these tapes, you know, hours and hours of her whole life and her life with Bill and you know, all of that. I tried as hard as I could to get some part of Lois's story into My Name Is Bill W., but as you know, a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie, or any television movie for that matter, only runs about 98 minutes. You don't have the couple of hours or more that you have in the feature film, so there was no time to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And I tried, after Bill W. came out, I tried to introduce to interest producers into doing the Lois story, but they would look at me like, you know, with strange looks on their faces, saying, "Well, who's Lois Wilson? You know, what's Alan on?" You know, don't forget, Bill. There was, by this time, there was 4 biographies written about Bill, and there was nothing about Lois.
Sure.
You know, nobody really knew her. She was a very background character. Plus the fact that Bill had passed away in 1971, and so after he passed away, everybody came to know him, because you don't take your anonymity to the grave.
Right.
But Lois remained alive and remained anonymous, right?
Sure.
Because of the anonymity of the Al-Anon program, so nobody got to really know her outside of Al-Anon. But anyway, when she passed away, as I say, I tried to get producers interested and couldn't. And we moved from New York to our lovely home here in South Carolina. We now live in Little River, South Carolina. And I was unpacking boxes in my office when I came across all of these old tapes that I had made with Lois some years back. And I plugged one into my recorder, and out came Lois's voice. And I was, oh, man, I started feeling guilty, you know. Mm-hmm. Because she had given me so much of herself, and I had given her so little in return. And then my wife comes running into my office, you know, saying, "Hey, that's Lois. What are you going to do with all? What are you going to do with that?" And it wasn't, you know, just a matter of, you know, short time before I realized what I had to do, and that was write a book. Because if you write a book about somebody and it gets published, that person becomes important, right? And so I wrote the book, and then Hallmark found the book and called me up and said, "Hey, look, why didn't you tell us about this? We want to do this story."
Now they want to do it. Yeah.
Right. Now they want to do it. So and they've done it, and it's fabulous. It's fabulous. It's called When Love Is Not Enough. The reason for that is that Lois often told me that she thought her love would be enough to get Bill sober and keep him sober, but it wasn't. Her love was never enough. And you know, love cannot cure alcoholism or drug addiction or any addiction. It can help support recovery, but it can't cure the disease. And Lois came to realize that. So that's why I call this the book and the movie When Love Is Not Enough. And the movie stars Winona Ryder and Barry Pepper, and they're absolutely fabulous together. And this is the other side of the story. This is the story of family disease. This is the story of how the family is affected by the terrible addiction of alcoholism. And I've done the same thing here, Chris, that I did with Bill W. When Lois finally gave me permission to do it, she said, just make me two promises. I said, what's that, sweetheart? And she said, number one, you cannot break my anonymity while I'm alive. I said, okay. And she said, secondly, Bill, I know sometimes in movies you got to change things and dramatize things and whatnot, but dear, just tell the truth of the story. And I believe we did that in Bill W., and I know we've done it also now in When Love Is Not Enough. We've told the truth of the story.
The truth is enough for an amazing story. Mm-hmm. Lois was right there during the rise of Alcoholics Anonymous, which quite possibly is the most important recovery or social movement in the last couple hundred years, at least.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Al-Anon is so significant. We do a lot of interviewing with treatment professionals. Mm-hmm. On the show. And one of the things that's become very, very apparent is that if you're a legitimate treatment provider, or you're looking at recovery from addictive illness in any way responsibly, you have to engage the family. The family is part of the healing and the recovery process. And you know, Lois Wilson putting together Al-Anon is quite possibly the most significant thing in family healing from addictive illness that's ever been done.
Chris, that you just hit upon the other truth of the story, which a lot of people don't realize, and that is, without Lois Wilson, there would have been no AA. Bill himself, as well as Dr. Bob, both said that if without Lois, Bill would have died a drunkard's death. And Bob Smith, the co-founder of AA, often said that without Annie, he would have died a drunkard's death. So Lois is primarily responsible for not just AA and Al-Anon and Narcotics Anonymous and, you know, the 300 programs today that use the 12 steps of recovery. Lois was really responsible for it. And I focus on that in the book, and we focus on that in the movie too. And I hope you don't mind if I mention that we also focus on it on my website.
Oh, no.
If anybody
no,
would like more information, they can go to William Borchert, William BORCHERT.com. And there's a lot of information on there about the book and about the movie.
I'm on the website right now looking at the Lois book part. Mm-hmm. Really, really incredible. And you know what? I don't know about Bill as much as Lois, but didn't Lois have a lot of humility? I mean, she really didn't want to be, you know, paraded around as some kind of hero. She really wanted to stay anonymous and humble, even though she was a part of this extraordinary thing.
I'll give you a very, very brief story that highlights that point that you just made. First of all, what you said is absolutely true. But I was at the Stepping Stones one afternoon, and it was the end of the picnic. It was a Saturday afternoon, first week of June, and the picnic was ending, and there were about 500 people there. And what usually happened is they would then gather around the porch and would stroll into the house to say goodbye to Lois. And Lois would be in the living room sitting on a couch next to this big stone fireplace that she had. It was beautiful. And I was standing next to the fireplace, and I'm watching these people come up to her one at a time as she's sitting on the couch. They would kneel down in front of her, and they would take her hands. And many of them would just cry tears of joy and kiss her hands and kiss her forehead and thank her for saving their lives and restoring their families. And this went on for an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes. I mean, we're talking about several hundred people. And I'm listening. When it was all over, I came over and sat on the couch, and Lois was kind of tired at this point. And I looked at her, and I said, you know, Lois, even God Almighty himself would be pleased by such adulation, you know. So how do you handle it? And she looked at me and she smiled and she said, "I'll tell you, but you probably wouldn't understand." She always thought I wouldn't understand things. And she was probably right most of the time. But she looked at me and she said, "Bill, I'm only a symbol. What they're thanking me for is what Al-Anon and AA has done for them." She knew who she was. She had no other concepts of, you know, prestige or power or anything like that. She was a simple, loving, kind, humble lady who knew who she was and was very, very, very grateful for being who she was and grateful for all that God had given her in her life. That was Lois Wilson.
And she saw herself as a symbol. That's
a symbol.
Very, very appropriate.
It is appropriate, yeah.
Now let's talk a little bit about the making of the movie. Were you on location at all with this?
Oh, this recent one, yeah. Yep, I was up in Canada for the shooting. And it was a marvelous, marvelous 5 weeks. It took 5 weeks to shoot. Actually, six. One week of rehearsal and 5 weeks of shooting. And we had a fantastic director and a fantastic cast. And, you know, the same thing happened on Bill W. When word got out that this film was going into production, an awful lot of production people fought to get on the set. Sound people, you know, everything from grips to sound people to location managers, to, you know, cameramen. I mean,
probably all of them in recovery.
Yeah. For example, there were three hairdressers and two makeup artists. Two of the three hairdressers were in Al-Anon, and the both makeup artists were in AA. Isn't that incredible?
Well,
and John Kent Harrison, the director, wonderful director. He's very won many awards. The first night I got up there, we went out and had a bite to eat, and he said, looked at me across the table, and he said, "Before you ask, let me tell you why I wanted to make this movie." He said, "My mother died of alcoholism."
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And he said, "She died in my arms." And then he told me the story of how he hated her all through his growing up years. And he was embarrassed by her and all of that. And one night he's sitting in the den with his dad watching TV. He was at 19 years old, and his mother comes staggering into the room and sits down between them. And John said, "I hated her, and I was praying that she would just die." And suddenly she curls up and she falls into my lap. I thought she was going to sleep. And after a little while, I reached down and suddenly realized she had died right there in my lap, with me praying she would die. And he said, "It took me years to get over that guilt." But he said, "That's how this disease affects the families, and I wanted to make this movie for that reason." Isn't that powerful?
That is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing. How did the star and co-star, how do you think they worked out in the movie?
Oh, you know, sometimes I'm a writer, but sometimes I find difficulty finding the right words to describe such power. The chemistry, first of all, between the two of them was just marvelous, because they both wanted to do this movie so much. Winona told me that she had broken up with her last boyfriend because of his alcoholism,
uh-huh.
and that she had known a number of friends of hers who were at Al-Anon. And Barry Pepper, who many people may not know, but he was in The Green Mile, Saving Private Ryan, and all. He is just a fantastic actor. And he said that once he read my book, he knew that he had to make this movie. So, and he was a perfect Bill Wilson.
Yeah, there are some clips that are on YouTube, the short promotional clips, and mm-hmm. I checked those out before we did this interview, and it really, really looks like it's a well done movie, and period correct, and you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm from Barry and Winona,
mm-hmm.
and I really can't wait to see it.
Well, it's a great love story, Chris, a mm-hmm. fantastic love story. And that's how it begins, because, you know, you have to show how deeply these people were in love. So for the audience to wonder why she stayed with him all those years and, you know, 17 years of horrible drinking, she stayed with him because she loved him desperately,
mm-hmm.
and did everything she could to help him get well. And he clung to her because he just absolutely adored her. And that comes across in the movie, in spite of the fact that we really go through all the degradation involved in alcoholism. We watch his progression into the disease. We watch her progression along with him, blaming herself, making excuses for him and all that. You know, and then they come out the other end, and at the end you see that their love has just blossomed in the sunlight of sobriety. Mm-hmm. It's just a wonderfully well done film. And by the way, Hazelton Publishing, mm-hmm. who published the book, you know, The Lois Wilson Story When Love Is Not Enough, has just come out with a special movie edition. So if anybody, naturally I'm going to urge people to get the book.
Well, so are we.
because they have Barry and Winona are on the cover, mm-hmm. In one of the motorcycle scenes with, you know, the joyous motorcycle scenes. And it's a beautiful cover, and I think people would want that, you know, it's almost like a souvenir of the movie. But the story, the story is really written in Lois's own words because I had so much material. You know, she answered my questions so well, and she directed me for further research, so that and she shared with me the depths of her pain. And then I went and spoke with other people who knew her very well. Mm-hmm. Some of the early members of Al-Anon, some neighbors. I mean, so that the story of Lois Wilson is the story of how families can recover from this terrible disease.
You know, the sacrifices she made were not just while Bill was drinking either. You know, if you start reading some of the history about how Bill Wilson, was putting together the architecture of Alcoholics Anonymous and how he was bringing drunks into the house all the time, and they were starting fires and chasing Lois with scissors and all kinds of stuff like this. There was huge sacrifices while Bill was getting sober trying to help other people too.
She woke up at 3:00 in the morning smelling gas. She and Bill ran down the stairs into the kitchen, and there was a guy with his head in the oven.
I tried to kill himself.
I mean, well, he did kill himself.
Oh, he did. Oh,
he committed suicide with his head in the oven, yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that she was living through with this disease. She was, you know, front line of alcoholism. And she cooked and cleaned as well as working in Macy's to support them. She was an incredible lady.
And Bill was running around helping drugs, which...
He was going to Bellevue. He was going down to Bowery. Dr. Silkworth was sending drunks over from Towns Hospital. She had quite a caseload.
Greystone Hospital
and all
kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I
detail all of that in the book and Lois's reaction to... And some of the really funny stories that she told about some of those drunks in that house. In fact, there was one guy that, you know, if you drank, you had to leave.
Uh-huh.
So there's one big fat guy drank and he had to leave. But that night he got so drunk he had no place to go, so he decided to come back, but he couldn't go in the front door, so he crawled into a side window and slid down those days they had chutes where you...
The coal
chutes, right. And he wound up in the coal bin. And they found him the next morning. And so they brought him upstairs and put him in this big metal, you know, tub. Uh-huh. That's what they had back in those days. They got him in all right, but they couldn't get him out because he was so fat, and when he got wet, he got too slippery.
This big wet guy covered with soot in the middle of their floor.
Yeah, right, right.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, locally in our area, there was a halfway house that was starting up in Morristown, New Jersey. This is, you know, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be for women. And so they gave Lois a call. And they said, we would like to name our house after you. We're going to have a halfway house, and we'd like to name it after you. And we'd like to get your permission to do that. And the story back from the house was that she said, well, you can if you want to. I couldn't see. I don't know why in the world you would want to.
Yeah.
But you can call it the Wilson House if you like. And
mm-hmm.
And so in Morristown, New Jersey, there's a halfway house.
I've been there twice.
Have you? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like her humility, like not really understanding why someone would want to be, you know, name something after her.
That's the way she was. Mm-hmm. That's the way she was. She was and she didn't want to take all the credit. You know, Ann Bingham was the co-founder. When she started Al-Anon, she really wanted Annie Smith, But Annie Smith died, you know,
1948. Right.
And they were still at that point developing Al-Anon in 1948, and Lois always called Annie Smith her Al-Anon sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
But when Annie passed away, she reached out for her next best friend, who was Ann Bingham, and Ann Bingham came over to the house. But they were now, by that time, they were living in Bedford Hills. And Annie Bingham started helping, and Lois began to give Annie all the credit, and yet Lois was the one that did 90% of it. The reason why Ann Bingham became the co-founder of Al-Anon, and I'm not belittling this at all, because she did a wonderful job, but the reason she became a co-founder is, as somebody told me, that she had a typewriter, and they needed a typewriter. But Ann Bingham went on to do an awful lot of wonderful work at Al-Anon and help it grow, and then she went to California and helped it grow in California. So it was just a wonderful relationship, the two of them.
Well, Al-Anon has saved a whole lot of lives. You know, sometimes people don't realize just how ill family members can get. It can be life threatening to family members as well as the people who are afflicted with it. The mm-hmm. people that are affected by it can really get in real trouble.
Lois, one of Lois's dear friends, became Sister Ignatia.
Sure.
Who was the little nun who loved drunks, like Dr. Silkworth was the doctor that loved drunks.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Ignatia, as you know, was out in Cleveland and ran a place called Rosary Hall. And Lois would visit her quite frequently with Bill when they would visit Dr. Bob and Annie. And Sister Ignatia always used to say to Lois, many times when a wife brings her husband here, I can't tell who's the sickest. You know? And that's very true. I mean, you know, wives or husbands of alcoholics or parents of children get so sick from this disease that they don't sometimes realize how bad they really are, you know?
Alcoholism corrodes your quality of life,
mm-hmm.
and anybody in the same house with you. But mm-hmm. you know, one of the amazing things that I've seen from some people that have been exposed to Al-Anon is an ability to have a sense of serenity about their lives, even if their husbands or wives continue to drink. They basically learn how to how to deal with life on life's terms, and you know, not get deeply emotionally drawn into the drama of it all.
Lois often called it learning how to live in the eye of the hurricane.
That's a very, very good way to put it.
Yeah, well, you step out of the, you know, you stop going around and around and around with the drunk, and you finally step away. You detach with love, and you step into some peace in the eye of the hurricane, and you learn how to live, you know, a better life, even with that hurricane swirling around you, you know. Lois said many, many, many wonderful things, which I quote in the book. And by the way, if I may again be so crass, since Hazelden has re-released the book as what they call a movie book, it's now back in all the bookstores. Barnes & Noble's got a big display.
Mm-hmm.
Borders, Books a Million, it's got it. Also, you can get it on Amazon.com or Hazelden.com.
It would make a good present to a family member if you're somebody out there in recovery.
Now, this again is going to sound crass, but this is why I really wrote it. Because I believe this book belongs in every house in America for this reason. In the course of going through all of the things that Lois, you know, told me on tape and then doing research, I was astounded when I was down at the American Medical Association in Washington, and one of the doctors there on the board told me that he and everybody else there, plus the government, believed that there were something like 40 million or close to 40 million alcoholics in the United States. I think he said something like 12% of the population is alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And that every alcoholic affects at least 5 to 7 other people in their lives. You know, the husband affects the wife, the children, the neighbors, the relations, and so on.
It's the number one health crisis in America today. It is.
Right. So that means that there are more than 200 million people in this country alone, just in this country alone, affected by the disease of alcoholism. And Chris, you know that very few of them know what to do or where to go. And Lois found the answer, and it's in that book, and it'll be in this movie. So I hope people really watch the movie and read that book, because that's the answer that they're looking for.
Now, as well as that book, you've written some other books, Sought Through Prayer and Meditation.
Oh, that was a blessing, that one, yeah.
And 50 Quiet Miracles, you want to talk for a few minutes?
Oh, that was another blessing, yeah. Yeah, you know, people talk about coincidences, and Lois says there's no such thing as a coincidence. It's God doing something for us we cannot do for ourselves. And she used to always say that everybody is touched by God's miracles. And if only they would, the trouble is that we look around, we expect a miracle to be like a blinding light, you know, or, you know, clap of thunder or flash of lightning. You know, somebody getting up out of a deathbed and walking and all of that big stuff that you hear and read about. Mm-hmm. And she said, God performs quiet little miracles. And so I began to go around looking for them. And I found them. And so I wrote a book about these, about a young lady who worked at the, in the Twin Towers in New York.
Uh-huh.
She was about to get fired from her job because she was an alcoholic and missing on Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So she was given an opportunity by her boss to go to a rehab in New Jersey, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want to because she didn't believe she was. And she went to the rehab in New Jersey, fought it every step of the way. And the sixth day she told me she was there, she went into this, you know, group therapy room, you know, where everybody was sitting around. And suddenly somebody came running in and flipped on the television. And it was about the planes crashing into the Twin Towers.
The towers were going down, yeah.
And where she worked on that very same floor.
Wow.
And she suddenly realized that but for the grace of God, she would have been dead. And I get goosebumps when I talk, but that's just one of the 50 stories in that book.
Amazing.
Yeah, I loved writing that book. It's because it helped me realize that, you know, God is, you know, the presence of God is always all around us. And when things like that happen, we should take time out and just be quiet and still. And if we are, we will feel the presence of God in our lives, you know.
You just need to be awake to it. You need to be aware.
Yes.
And the only conclusion you can come to is this is a generous universe with a very, very divine hand behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I could talk for 12 hours on my own personal experiences and small little miracles that have happened in my life.
Absolutely.
You know, I believe just sitting here talking to you is one of them.
Absolutely. To be given the talent and the opportunity to have the show to carry the message to those that need to hear it is a miracle.
I really do believe that's true.
To me, to be given the opportunity to write the story about Bill and the story about Lois and have films come out and to carry that message all over the world, that's a miracle.
It's an extraordinary achievement, too, Bill. You must have some very, very good qualities within you to be able to move through the things you need to move through to see those to completion.
But, you know, I'm not a falsely humble guy. In fact, I'm not a humble guy at all, as a matter of fact. But I do recognize where it comes from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply when you're sober, you're able to use the talents that God gave you and to use them the way He wants you to use them as a useful tool for Him to help other people. And that's really what it's all about. You know that.
I do.
You know? Yeah.
I know it from personal experience. And now, you're sober 48 years now, isn't that?
As of yesterday.
congratulations on
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Chris.
I hope that there's a really big party for your 5-0.
Oh, okay. Will you give me a guarantee of that, Chris?
I don't know if I can guarantee it, but I'll tell you, if you make it, will you please invite me?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Bill, you know, you've done so many great things. I mean, you know, starting out with, I guess, the Kansas City Bomber and working your way up to My Name is Bill W. and When Love is Not Enough. That's just a ride that must have been very, very fun.
Oh, it still is.
What do you have planned in your future? What are some of the things that you haven't achieved yet that you would like to?
Well, I've just finished another new book. It's called 1,000 Years of Sobriety.
Wow.
And it's the stories of 20 men and women from all over the world who have stayed sober 50 years or more and are still very, very active. And it's a marvelous, marvelous book.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, doing that and listening to these stories of these people and getting to know them has just been an incredible experience.
Is Jim Cusack in that book at all?
No.
Okay.
He's a
New Yorker. I thought you might know him.
No, but we should talk about that because I think Hazel wants me to do a 1,000 years too.
Well, Jim is like 64 years sober.
I know the name, but
he's been running Veritas Villa for many years. He's one of the real long timers. In recovery.
Great.
Anyway, listen,
great.
Bill, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know how busy you are right now, especially
with the
movie coming out. It's really, really been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chris.